Epilogue. Ansel. Summer bloomed slow and languorous at Chateau Leblanc. Wild sage and lavender rippled across the mountain in dusky purple and blue. White and yellow marguerites grew rampant between rocks along creek beds, joined by the blushing pink of thrift and clover. I'd never seen such colors in life. I'd never felt such warmth on my cheeks, like the kiss of a mother, the embrace of a friend. If the voices, no, the laughter of my own friends hadn't called to me, I could have stood within the peace of those wildflowers forever. Lou wore a spray of each on her wedding day. Sitting cross-legged atop her childhood bed, the golden thread of her quilt sparkling in the late afternoon sunlight, she waited impatiently for Coco to weave the blooms into a crown. "Stop squirming," Coco chided, grinning and tugging a strand of Lou's hair. "You're shaking the whole bed." Lou only wriggled her hips more pointedly. "Oh, it'll be shaking tonight." Celie's cheeks warmed along with my own when she swept a simple ivory gown from the armoire to cover her embarrassment. I smiled, settling on the chaise beside Madame Lebel. She couldn't see me, of course, but from the way her eyes sparkled, from the way they danced, I thought she might feel me instead. "You, my friend, are delectably depraved." "Oh, I'm sorry." With another wide grin, Lou twisted to face Coco. "Who was it who lost her virginity atop a..." Coughing delicately, Celie asked, "Might I suggest we postpone this conversation for more appropriate company?" Her eyes flicked to Violette and Gabrielle, who flitted about the room, examining anything and everything. The gold leaf across the ceiling, the moon dust on the sill, the gilded harp in the corner, and the tin soldiers beneath the chaise. Lou had etched mustaches on them as a child. A trunk at the foot of her bed still held toy swords and broken instruments, half-read books, and a white rabbit. Stuffed, of course. The very real cat at my feet hissed at it. Melisandre, Lou had named her. The cat, not the rabbit. With her broken tail and crooked teeth, the gray tabby wasn't beautiful, but one wouldn't know it from the way Lou looked at her. She'd found the cat yowling indignantly in a back alley after the Battle of Césarine, and she'd promptly adopted the pitiful creature, much to Reed's chagrin. Melisandre didn't like Reed.
"Please do not worry yourself, Mademoiselle Celie."
With poppy blooms braided into her black hair, Violette giggled and bounced on the balls of her feet as Madame Lebel cackled beside me.
"We know all about the birds and the bees, don't we, Gabby? It's terribly romantic."
"I think the euphemism is silly." Gabrielle now sat beside me on her knees, wrinkling her olive dress, and attempted to coax Melisandre closer with a piece of string. The cat hissed again before glancing at me with a pained expression. Grinning, I knelt to scratch her ears, and the hiss transformed to a purr.
"As if we need the imagery of a bird laying eggs to understand ovulation, or a bee depositing pollen to understand fertilization. Oh, dear."
Celie's cheeks washed as pretty a petal pink as her dress, and she draped the ivory gown across the foot of the bed.
"That is quite enough talk about that, I think. It's almost time for the ceremony. Shall we help you don your gown, Lou?"
When Lou nodded and rose to her feet, Melisandre abandoned me instantly, darting to her mother's side. Lou didn't hesitate to scoop her up and cuddle her against her chest.
"And how is my darling honeybee? So fetching."
She nodded appreciatively to Celie, who'd woven a miniature version of Lou's flower crown for the cat. Melisandre purred under Lou's praise, craning her neck, exorbitantly pleased with herself. Snorting, Coco helped Celie unlace the wedding gown.
"You know, Reed is currently plotting her demise."
Madame Lebel rose to join them with a chuckle.
"It was his own fault. Vanity, thy name is Cat, after all."
Even Manon, who'd hovered silently in the corner, unsure of her place among these people, inched forward tentatively, clutching the hand-fasting ribbons. When Lou winked at her, she smiled. It was a small, unsure sort of smile, but a smile nonetheless. I recognized it well. I'd worn it many times. Pushing to my own feet, I strode to stand beside her. She would find her new place here. They all would.
He'd insulted her!
Lou pressed a kiss to Melisandre's scarred nose, undeterred.
Besides, the piss washed right out of his pillow. No harm done.
To Melisandre, she crooned, "He won't mock your singing again, will he, honeybee? No, he won't." Melisandre yowled in answer, rubbing her head against Lou's chin. I looked away as they helped her into her gown. Though heat still suffused my cheeks, it was no longer embarrassment, but pride. I nearly burst with it. For too long had Lou deserved this moment, all of these moments, the large ones and the small ones and the ones in between. She'd suffered more than most, more than any one person ever should. I could only hope that she'd delight in just as much from this day forward. Hope. It wasn't the sickness. God, she'd done so beautifully. They all had. Reed would cherish her, I knew. He would do everything in his power to ensure her happiness, and she would return his efforts tenfold. Though I'd known little of life when I'd walked beside them, even then I'd recognized theirs was a love that would change everything. A love that would break the world. A love that would make it new. Their love had been the cure. "What do you think?" Lou's low murmur brought pressure to my eyes. "Will it do?" I waited to hear Madame Lebel's and Celia's exclamations, Violette's and Gabrielle's laughter, Coco's sniffle, even Manon's soft inhalation, before turning to look at my dearest friend. Reed paced in the early evening sunlight of the old pear grove. It burnished his hair more golden than copper, caught the fine stitching of his jacket, and made the threads shimmer. He'd forgone his bandolier for the occasion, instead buckling a single sword at his waist. He steadied it with one hand as he trod a well-worn path in the grass. His other he dragged through his hair. Beau watched him with unabashed amusement.
"Tell me you aren't nervous."
"I'm not nervous," Reed scoffed, as if insulted. But his eyes still darted to the opposite end of the grove, where guests had already begun to arrive. It would be an intimate ceremony. They'd invited only those they loved or trusted. Zena and Seraphine, Toulouse and Thierry, Johannes Pan and his wife. Babette mingled with a handful of other witches, all of whom kept one eye on Jean-Luc and Father Achille. Blaise and his children hovered at the edge of the grove, speaking little, until Toulouse beckoned them to come sit. Even Elvire and La Simone were in attendance, lounging regally with their diamond gowns and fishhook earrings. Reed, Beau, and Jean-Luc had spent the morning filling the grove with chairs. On the backs of each, they'd painstakingly looped brightly colored ribbons and flowers, poppies, marigolds, peonies, and cornflowers, scarlets and golds and blushes and blues, all nestled in beds of deep green. More blooms spilled from the stumps of pear trees throughout the grove, where lush moss crept over gnarled wood. Reed glared at the stumps, the only piece of the scene out of place. Only yesterday he'd painstakingly constructed the arbor of vines and florets overhead. Every detail had been planned, every flower plucked to perfection. Beau followed his gaze with a wistful expression.
"If only Claude were here. He could have grown new trees."
Reed looked at him incredulously.
"He could also be dead. We don't know that. He's a god.
Perhaps after he's served his time, The ground opened up and swallowed him. He will return to us. Good as new, Beau finished determinedly, clasping Reed's shoulder, forcing him to halt.
Loosen up, brother mine.
It's your wedding day.
I know.
Reed nodded to himself, shaking free to pace again.
I know. I just want it to be perfect. And it is.
He was right. Lou would love it. If my heart ached that I, too, couldn't be part of this moment, this memory, the pain eased when I caught sight of an empty chair in the front row. In a burnished oval frame, a picture of my likeness had been affixed to a bouquet of sunflowers. Warmth radiated through me as I knelt to study it. They'd saved me a seat after all. When Coco swept forward in her own gown of ivory, with flowers braided into her black curls, the warmth in my chest bloomed tenfold. Exertion flushed her cheeks, and her dark eyes sparkled with excitement as she looked to Reed and Beau, lifting the sunflower bouquet from my seat. It's time. She dipped her chin to Beau. She's waiting. With a smirk, Beau straightened his jacket and smoothed his immaculate waves.
Finally.
He clasped Reed's shoulder before turning on his heel.
My moment to shine.
Snorting, Coco rolled her eyes and said, No one will be looking at you. He arched a wicked brow.
You will be.
She lifted a casual shoulder, speaking over it as she strode back up the aisle. We'll see.
Yes, we...
He skidded to a halt in his pursuit of her, his eyes falling on Jean-Luc. The spray on the latter's chair had loosened, and he was attempting to reattach it.
Honestly, Jean, what did I tell you? We wanted to appear artfully strewn, as if the daisies sprang up from this very chair. You're tacking them on too neatly.
When Jean-Luc scowled, unimpressed, Beau elbowed him aside to do it himself.
Like tits on a boar.
Careful, Your Majesty.
With a wry grin, Jean-Luc tossed a handful of fallen edelweiss at his head. The King of Belterra lurched away with a violent curse, fingers combing his hair frantically.
You must those luscious locks.
I will kill you.
Coco caught his hand and dragged him up the aisle before they could brawl. Grinning, despite myself, I followed them around the bend, where Lou stood out of sight with Madame Labelle, Celie, and Manon. Beau shook his head when he saw her, whistling low and appreciative.
Reed is going to lose his mind.
Lou winked and shimmied her shoulders. That's the plan. Madame Labelle fixed one of her soon-to-be daughter's curls, arranging it artfully around Lou's freckled cheek.
You look beautiful, see? I shall see you soon. Come!
She motioned for Celie and Manon to join her, leaving Lou, Coco, Beau, and me alone in the shadow of a withered pear tree. The only one that had survived. When Reed had suggested holding the festivities here, Madame Labelle had protested, explaining again how Morgan had torched these trees in a fit of rage. Reed knew that, of course. He knew how love could twist even the most beautiful of people, of places, into cruel and dark things. He also knew how special this grove had once been to his mother, to all the Dame Blanche. Lou had agreed, and together they'd made it beautiful once more. When Coco extended the sunflower bouquet, Lou's grin dimmed slightly. Her finger traced the curve of the frame.
Do you think he's watching?
Coco looped an arm through hers.
I think he wouldn't miss it for anything.
He should have been here. He should have given me away, too.
Beau claimed Lou's other arm, tapping my face in the frame.
He still is.
I still am,
I whispered with a smile. In response, a soft breeze rustled the branches overhead, bringing with it a pleasant warmth, a low hum of bees, a faint scent of daffodils, of new beginnings. I walked beside them as they led Lou up the aisle. Though Claude had gone, his empty seat remained next to mine, and Seraphine crooned a lovely ballad of love lost and love found, while Reed waited beneath the arbor. Madame Lebel stood beside him, the hand-fasting ribbons woven between her fingers. She winked at Father Achille in the audience. Beau cleared his throat, and every person, every human, witch, werewolf, and mermaid, turned as one to look at us. To look at Lou. Her breath caught in her throat, and her hands tightened instinctively on Coco and Beau.
"Breathe, sister mine,"
the latter murmured.
"Just breathe."
"Go on, Lou." Though she couldn't see me, couldn't hear me, I spoke the words regardless, pushing her forward gently. "Find peace." She seemed to relax at the warm touch of wind on her face. Then her eyes found Reed, and the entire world faded to that blinding, soul-deep connection. Anyone could see it. Everyone could feel it. If I reached out a hand now, I sensed I could have touched it. Though I knew not of magic patterns, this thread that connected Lou and Reed, this gravitational pull, this cosmic one, it was a magic in itself. It pulled them together. It would keep them there. He gazed at her with the most brilliant, devastating smile. She blinked at the sight of it, her own slightly dazed, slightly awed, as Reed took in her ivory gown, her trailing sleeves, the rich flowers atop her long, loose hair, the scarred roses at her throat. Summer had gilded her skin once more. It burnished the freckles across her nose. When he stepped forward to take her hand, he brushed his lips across them, trying to kiss each one.
"See something you like?"
he murmured in her ear. She eyed him appreciatively.
"Let's make this quick."
Their vows were not traditional, not this time, nor was their ceremony. It ended just as the sun touched the mountains, its golden light lengthening the shadows of the grove. Fireflies winked into existence. Ever curious, Feu Follet soon followed, their eerie glow lighting a path through the gnarled trees. Twice, Beau snatched an inquisitive Gabrielle away from them, much to her indignation.
"You rotten brother, I just want to see them."
Her protests could barely be heard over the music. Several more witches had trekked from the castle with mandolins, lutes, and lyres under arm. Others had brought wine. Indeed, most who'd remained at Chateau Leblanc gathered in the grove now, curious and wary. Though they gave Jean-Luc and Father Achille a wide berth, and Elvire and Blaise too, no one lifted a hand against them. Toulouse even managed to charm a pretty young witch into dancing with him. Another asked Liana for a turn. It took little for the rest to follow. Except for La Simone, who, with a cry of, "It has four legs!" chased after Melisandre with abject fascination. The cat hissed and yowled and streaked toward the safety of the castle. With the roll of her eyes, Elvire continued to examine the flowers, taking a tentative bite of a peony. Pan swatted her hand away in horror.
"No,"
he said sternly, wagging his finger.
"Absolutely not, Modus. You come to Césarine, and I will bake you something sweet, yes?"
Turning away, I watched Coco and Beau dance for one long, bittersweet moment. He said something to make her laugh, really laugh, the sort of laugh that transformed her entire face. The sound of it made him giddy. He twirled her closer next time, his attention rapt on her expression, drinking in the sight.
"I could do more than sail at the age of 3, he told her imperiously. "Sir D'Artagnan Delmore de Devere taught me to dance as soon as I could walk."
Unfortunately, he chose that moment to spin directly into Jean-Luc and Celie. Jean-Luc compensated seamlessly, twirling Celie outward with one hand while catching Coco's waist with the other. Beau, who'd slipped on impact, reeled into a stump and nearly lost his footing. Jean-Luc smirked.
Sir D'Artagnan de Mont-le-Devers is my godfather, your majesty.
Coco howled with laughter. I hoped she never stopped laughing. At the center of it all, Lou and Reed whirled with flushed cheeks and bright eyes. When she stepped on his toes for the third time, tipsy with drink, he swept her up in his arms and spun wildly, round and round, until Lou shrieked with delight. Tipping her head and urging him faster, he never lost his footing. He never loosened his grip. He even joined her when she belted out Big Titty Liddy. Though both sang horribly off-key, all applauded their efforts when they'd finished. And Lou swept into a dramatic bow. Cheeks red, Reed chuckled and tried to move away, out of the limelight, but Lou pulled him back. "Wasn't he marvelous?" She crowed the words with pride, cackling as his flush deepened. Madame Lebel whistled from Father Achille's arm. "Everyone tell him how marvelous he is. Tell him how impressive." Shaking his head, he tucked her firmly into his side and dragged her toward the nearest stump. "You're embarrassing me, wife."
"Look how red your face is,"
she cackled and wrapped her arms around his waist. "Just wait until the honeymoon. Those few blissful days where I'll have you all to myself." Reed smirked.
"I'll believe it when I see it. Your sisters can't leave you alone for more than an hour."
"That's why we're leaving the chateau." He raised a brow.
"Oh?"
"Oh," she confirmed, matter of fact. "There's an old cottage on the beach. It belonged to my grandmother. I've cleaned it out for the two of us." She nuzzled his chest, much like her cat. "Coco can handle the castle without me." Reed shrugged, the corner of his mouth still quirked.
"You're probably right. She's much more diplomatic."
"Excuse you?"
Lou elbowed him in the ribs in feigned outrage, raising her voice for the others to hear.
"Should I tell them about your impressive foot size? What about those other marvelous things you can do with your tongue?"
Reed actually clapped a hand over her mouth. Shoulders shaking, the two devolved into laughter as a wizened old woman hobbled into the grove. I didn't recognize her, but the others clearly did. Lou and Reed straightened, Coco and Beau stilled, and even Celie stepped closer to Jean-Luc. Though none appeared outright alarmed, a definite current of tension had materialized with the woman. Curiously enough, Xena smiled.
"Hello, dearies."
Bracelets clinked on the woman's wrist as she waved gaily, heedless of her less than warm reception. Her scarlet robes billowed around her.
"What a sublime evening for a wedding, and truly you could not have chosen a more fortuitous locale."
"Madame Sauvage."
Reed cast a quick, nervous glance toward Coco, Beau, and Celie. His next word sounded a question.
"Welcome."
Lou's eyes narrowed. "How did you find this place?"
"Ah."
Madame Sauvage clasped Lou's hands in her own, pressing a kiss to them.
"Felicitations, my dear, on your recent nuptials. It seems I missed quite a delightful evening, and you, in turn, missed my winsome company."
Her clouded eyes lingered on the witch with the mandolin.
"I trust you provided the correct designation this time? None of this LaRue business?"
Lou's frown deepened, but she didn't pull her hands away. "How do you know about that?" Madame Sauvage ignored the question. Instead, turning to Reed, she pinched his cheek.
"And you, young man, did you plant those seeds as you promised?"
"I..."
He looked again to Lou, more panicked now than before.
"I'm sorry, Madame Sauvage, but I misplaced them."
"You lost them, you mean?"
When Reed nodded, she clicked her tongue in disappointment.
I inched closer, studying her face. She seemed familiar, somehow. Like I'd met her before. And her disappointment, I glanced around, uncertain. It felt staged. Xena still smiled behind us. And that smile had spread to Seraphine, Toulouse, and Thierry. Madame Sauvage winked at them.
Well, Monsieur Leblanc, just how should we proceed?
We made a bargain,
you remember?
Reed nodded grimly.
I'll procure another pearl for you, madame. I promise.
You promised?
Madame Sauvage unfurled her fingers slowly, revealing a handful of seeds in her palm.
To plant the seeds?
We all stared at them.
How did you?
Reed started. Her dark eyes gleamed. Pressing the seeds into his hand, she said,
A fortuitous location, indeed. If you plant them, if you care for them, they will grow.
When Reed didn't move, when he only studied the seeds with open suspicion, Madame Sauvage poked his chest.
Well, what are you waiting for? Do it now. I'm not getting any younger.
I don't have a shovel.
With an impatient sigh, Lou waved her hand, and the seeds flew outward in a sharp burst of magic, scattering across the grove. In the next second, they burrowed into the ground of their own accord. There! She thrust her arm through Reed's. Are we settled? Have we honored this ridiculous bargain? Trees burst from the ground, as Madame Sauvage's answer. Pear trees. They climbed skyward at a rapid pace, white blossoms blooming and falling to reveal hard green fruit, a dozen in all, one tree for each seed planted. Lou gasped as Reed stared, as Beau leapt backward, and Madame Labelle stretched incredulously to touch one of the low-hanging fruit. Shaking her head, she whirled to face the old woman. Who are you? Madame Sauvage bowed, looking meaningfully at Lou.
A friend.
She turned without another word, and as suddenly as she'd hobbled into our presence, she hobbled out, leaving only the peculiar scent of earth in her wake, of fresh grass and pine sap and pears. Still smiling, Xena, Seraphine, Toulouse, and Thierry followed after her. Lou watched them go, slack-jawed, until unexpected laughter burst from her, until she was breathless with it. She turned to Reed, tears of mirth lining her turquoise eyes.
That nosy son of a bitch!
I didn't hear the rest, however, because at the edge of the grove, Madame Sauvage looked back to meet my gaze. My gaze. With a small smile, she inclined her head towards something behind me.
Ansel.
I turned at that voice, at that presence. I recognized it now as innately as my own. Two figures stood on the path down the mountain. His hair and jaw were my own, her eyes and her skin as well.
Are you ready, darling?
The woman extended an olive hand to me, and her smile. It was as warm as I'd always dreamed it. As warm as this summer night.
That boy is asking after you again,
the man said, wrapping an arm around her shoulders.
Etienne.
Butterflies erupted at the name. Unbidden, my feet drifted toward them, my lips lifting in a smile. I couldn't help one last look, however. At Lou, at Reed, at Coco, at Beau. They milled around the pear trees, feeling each trunk, testing the leaves, laughing at themselves with Terence and Liana and Manon.
If you plant them, if you care for them, they will grow.
My smile widened. Madame Sauvage had vanished, leaving them to life anew. Taking my mother's hand, I did too.